Okay, here we go. All levels are set in the booth. Mics are hot. Talent is ready. Three S's, Jim. Star, smile, strong. Here we go. Three, two, one. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Pod Testing. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and welcome to Captain Podtastic. Right here at WGNPlus.com. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNPlus.com. And don't forget my landing page. You go to WGNPlus.com. Go to the entertainment section. You'll see Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Click on there, and you will see all previous 122 episodes for your binging pleasure, because it only makes sense that this is episode 123. So welcome aboard. Thank you for clicking on, scrolling, swiping, whatever it is you do to find this thing we call a podcast. Your efforts are appreciated, as well as your time and your loyalty. So thank you very much for keeping the podcast going. And we will continue to keep the podcast going now with our regular contributor, Emily Arminetti. Hello, Emily.
Hey, Jim.
You know, we didn't have you on last week, as I did a full episode about my Elton John experience going to see the new tour. And in that time period, lots of stuff happened in the pop culture world. So I thought it would be only fitting that maybe we do a whole segment, because we have lots to talk about in the pop culture world. Well, and I have to say that the more that I've always considered myself, you know, a pop culture guru, even before the term pop culture existed. And I'm finding the more I now continue to wade in the pool of the pop culture, the more I feel like drowning.
Right. The more you know, the less you...
Yeah, well, I'll tell you,
The less intelligent you become.
Yeah, well, it's not even that. I'm really...
The less you understand.
Well, it's not even understanding. It's the less I like.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I am at a personal quandary. I'm watching a lot of this stuff, and I'm sitting there going, there was a time when this was kind of fun and cool.
Right.
And now it's just like I don't know what's going on. I mean,
it's just annoying. Now you're like,
well, it is annoying.
You're agitated.
Well, and I don't, you know, and once again, it's easy. I know it's easy for people to say, well, Jim, you're getting older. And so you're the crabby guy that wants to tell everybody to get off their grass. I don't really care if people are on my grass. I just don't want you on my block.
That's all.
If you can get to my grass, more power to you. but I don't really think it's a it's not just an age thing, and certainly some of them, I'm not sure, is creeping in. Now you tell me, because you're about 10 years younger than I am.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are you still as I don't know if the word obsessed is, but are you still excited, intrigued? What was it that first, attracted you to the pop culture world and got you into it as more than just a casual observer? And then is that still there for you?
That is an interesting question. I mean, look, when I was growing up, you know, some of my earliest memories involve music and film. So my family, we always had, I mean, my brother and I and my sister, we've always been really big music fans. And we had older cousins that somewhat influenced that in a way. And, my parents liked music, maybe not as much as we do now. But, you know, they were into it enough. So we had that exposure. And then, like, honestly, seriously, one of my earliest childhood memories is watching The Wizard of Oz and just being totally enthralled with this movie and everything about it. So I think I, you know, that kind of influenced me from an early age. But then, like, when I was kind of, we'll say coming of age. So you're, I guess nowadays that would be like when you're like a teenager. You
know, yeah.
Like
a nowadays it's four.
They say middle school now. I say junior high because that's what it was, you know, kind of that sixth, seventh, eighth grade, you know, you're kind of like 12, 13 or just becoming a teenager. And I remember that for starters at that time, magazines like, you know, Bop and Teen Beat and Tiger Beat and all those, you know, that those were really big because there were a lot of like, yeah, there were a lot of young stars on TV and in films and, you know, like musical artists and stuff. And you remember these magazines. They covered all that. You know,
I had an entire
wall of Johnny Depp, you know, pictures that I had torn out of those magazines, you know, and I know my generation wasn't the first. I know those existed kind of before my generation, but they were everywhere. I mean, the new, you know, when you were at the grocery store checkout line, it was all covered in those magazines. And I would inevitably convince my parents to let me get one or two of those I probably only went with them to the grocery store because I could convince them, like, we need this latest issue of Bop. Johnny Depp is on the cover. So, like, you know, that also.
Well, think about me. Well, wait a minute. Think about me. So, those magazines like 16 and Tiger Beat and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When I was a little kid growing up, you know, 10 or 11 or 12 or something like that, Elton was on the cover of those magazines, as crazy as that sounds, because we now know he's gay. But at the time, he was so popular that he was like all the other, you know, big people of the day, like David Cassidy and all those people, were on the cover of those Teen Beat magazines, and they were certainly trying to promote him as this teen heartthrob.
Sure, yeah. Well,
But I was a boy,
right?
And I had to go to the grocery store and buy those magazines. So I can only imagine what the cashier was thinking when I was buying Tiger Beat and 60, because they had some really cool posters and some really cool pictures, like you said, that I would be hanging up on my wall.
Yeah. Were you like, I really, really like Elton, but not in that way?
Yeah.
Not that there's anything wrong with
it. I was kind of embarrassed to buy them, but I still was.
You your mom in to do it.
I know, but I was not embarrassed enough because I still have them.
Yeah, clearly.
I still have them.
Yes.
Yeah. But
yeah. No, I mean, that kind of happened with everyone. You know, I mean, I for sure thought I was going to marry George Michael at one point in my life. I mean, you know, come on. And he was all over. He was like a big
symbol. Well, look at Faith.
For women.
I mean, remember the MTV video for Faith? I mean, my God.
With
the jeans and the shaking the butt and everything. Yeah, I mean, and don't forget, I mean, the irony of George Michael, sadly, is that, you know, he really never even admitted he was gay until he got caught, you know, like in the...
Did he? No, I don't know about that because, you know, Freedom 91, I think it was really...
I know, but he was never... But he never fully... He never fully came out, really, until he got...
You're talking about when he got busted in the...
That's what I'm saying. When he got busted, he finally kind of...
Public restroom.
Yeah, he finally begrudgingly... Yeah. Sort of came out, but he was very guarded.
I don't know. I still think that Freedom 91 was his way of coming out, even if he didn't explicitly come out on People magazine saying, like, yep, I'm gay.
Right.
You know, I feel that that was his way of acknowledging it.
But still, I guess my original point is, so we grew up, and that's and what you're describing is the same way that I did. I was a little younger because I was an only child, so that was kind of my, you know, the music and television and movies were kind of my, you know, my companion, you know. At a younger age, I was more into that. So as I look forward now, to your point, we were first attracted to the music and the movies and the TV of the time, and got into it as time went on. And as you said, you looked at, you know, you know, Wizard of Oz and got totally blown away, and I certainly had my touchstone moments. So I'm just wondering, I mean, I wonder if it is a combination of, you know, the older you get, you know, obviously, the movies and the music is aimed at a younger, you know, kind of age group, and there's a different mindset there. I understand that, and I'm not, you know, fighting that. But I also think that you cannot underestimate the impact that the internet and social media have had on our culture in the last 10 or so years, and that it has, aside from the age factor, and maybe it's not as easily to relate to some of the stuff because it doesn't really speak directly to you anymore like it did. And if you talk to a teenager, they completely get it because that's who it's aimed at.
Yeah, sure.
But I think that, you know, we have our culture has become such a place now where there are everything is just out there. There are no boundaries. There's no kind of
No barrier to entry either, right?
Yeah, there's no barrier to entry, and once you get in, there's no barrier to what you do.
Well, so I think that, so you're asking me, am I still as excited about it? I mean, it's hard for me to answer that question because I love a good, you know, celebrity breaking news story or, you know, and I do, I mean, now I'm probably more into the fashion side of things. And, you know, that fashion over time, which is something I've always been interested in as well, that at a certain point merged with celebrity.
Oh,
right?
My gosh. I mean, now, you know, that
it went from being like in the 90s, the catwalk and the supermodels and the Isaac Mizrahi documentary about him, you know, one of his collections, to being actually more celebrity driven than even like fashion.
Oh, I mean, I think actually that the idea, and I'm not trying to be stereotypical here, I think it's just a fact, but in the last 15 to 20 years, as the entire gay culture has become much more prominent and much more accepted into the mainstream, I think fashion and gossip and things like that, which have always been, you know, kind of trademarks of the gay culture, have now completely permeated the mainstream.
Well, but also like, yeah, so I'm trying to pinpoint like how my interests have changed. So there's that element, but then like you said, there's the whole internet, social media, and that how that has changed the entire dynamic of celebrity, because suddenly you have, I mean, for starters, you have a bunch of people who have become famous for like not doing anything except maybe becoming well known on social media channels. So that's one thing. So like most of these people, I don't know who they are. I don't know what they do.
Right?
I don't know where to find them. I don't know why they're on the cover of Us Weekly.
And then when you find them, there's no reason for their popularity. They offer nothing.
Right. So there's that part of it. And then the other side of it too is the, you know, it's kind of the emergence, which this kind of started back up again in the early 2000s of American Idol, but the reemergence, we'll say, of reality television, because there were earlier forms, like even back when you know before I was born, I think there was one like show that followed a family in real life.
Yeah, it was called that was on PBS. Yeah.
Yeah. Then there was The Real World, right? When I was in, like, just finishing up high school, going to college, The Real World was like a big thing.
Well, that's what started the whole thing.
But then it was quiet for a while. But then I do remember when American Idol, right when I was, like, getting ready to leave the States to move to London, American Idol had premiered.
Well, I think it was Survivor.
Survivor.
Survivor is the one that changed the game because...
Okay, you're right.
Survivor definitely changed the game.
There was another one that was coming on right around the time I was moving. It was something about like high school reunion or something. And the reason I remember that is because it was like a high school in Oak Park that they were bringing together like these classmates like 10 years later or whatever. And again, another reality show. Now, fast forward to 2018, it's everywhere. You know, you've got The Bachelor, The Bachelorette, The Bachelor in Paradise, Dancing with the Stars, this is that. And I don't even know, again, You know, I'm standing in the grocery store checkout. I'm looking at People Magazine. I'm looking at Us Weekly. I don't know who these people are on the cover.
Yeah.
So that to me is, I love a good celebrity story. I love a good film. I love a good award show. But pop culture in general has changed. So I think maybe there's still like a little niche corner of pop culture that I can get excited about, but there, yeah.
It's very disconcerting because it has been, at least for me, a major part of my interests and of my life. And so it's very disconnecting to feel like, wait a minute, I always consider myself kind of, you know, up to date and staying with the times. But there comes a point where I was always up to date and even ahead of the curve because what was happening was right in my wheelhouse. And so it was part of me. It was like I had an insatiable need. It was almost second nature to know this stuff and to find out about it. And now, to your point, we are inundated. There are so many subcultures or subsegments of the pop culture world now that it is impossible to stay up to date on all of them. And as I said, what's even more, you know, kind of disappointing is that when you discover these quote unquote popular sub segments of the pop culture, you say, okay, well, wait a minute, let me give this a shot then. Okay, I found this, and I'm going, okay, what's this? Nothing here. You know, the music is not, you know, the music isn't hitting me. I don't care about reality shows. I'm not watching YouTube or internet superstars. I'm not watching people planking. You know,
planking.
Remember planking when they would like when you would stand straight. You remember?
No.
You remember that? Oh, there was a big internet thing. You know, 5-6 years ago, where you would just like lay straight on a bench, and you would look like you were flat. You don't remember that?
No.
Yeah, planking. Look it up.
Wow, I totally missed out.
So you missed out on planking, but I didn't because I didn't care about it. But my point is, I don't care about, you know, what was the name of that cat? Remember that cat? The grumpy cat?
Grumpy cat.
Yeah, I didn't care about grumpy cat. I don't care about cat playing the piano. Don't send me cat videos.
Right.
You know, so.
Well, then you better stay off YouTube.
Yeah, well, that's my point. And so that's what's so disconcerting on my standpoint is that I want to be, I still want to be immersed.
Yeah.
And engrossed in what's happening. But it is not aimed at me or it is not of interest of me. And I bring this up because I was watching the Emmy and this really struck me. And that's one thing I wanted to talk about. You just said, you still like a good award show.
Yeah.
Well, go find one. I mean, I had to laugh at the Emmys, which was just on. The winner of the best variety production was the Oscar show.
Right. That's one of my pet peeves. I hate that they give awards
to an award show.
Award shows.
But not only that. But not only that, it was a horrible show. Do you remember last year's Oscars? Last year's Oscars was awful to the point that the Oscars, you know, board, you know, has to go and change all the rules for next year because the ratings were so bad and the show got such terrible reviews and yet it wins an Emmy.
I know, right? Like the ratings were horrible. Everybody gets really bored of the Oscars now. I don't even remember who was in the category. I mean,
I don't even remember who won.
Award, the Golden Globes, the Tonys.
Who won? What was best picture?
You, well, Oh, gosh, I don't even know.
I just remembered now. Shape of Water.
Shape of Water. I was going to guess that.
Yeah, but I mean,
basing that on
I mean, you know, go down the street and find 100 people and ask them who saw that.
Yeah.
I guarantee you, if you went downtown in the downtown metropolis, it would be zero. Maybe if you went to a hipster neighborhood, you'd get 4.
I don't even know about that. I'm not even sure it was a hipster thing. I think my mom watched it on a flight.
Yeah, right.
But I mean,
but my point is, I'm watching the Emmys here, and I was just, it was so, I once again, I felt so disjointed from it. You know, I understand that there's this, you know, this renaissance, you know, because of the Donald Trump thing with Alec Baldwin of Saturday Night Live. But you know what? If you watch Saturday Night Live for the other 88 minutes, it's still hard to watch.
But I thought, oh, are you talking about how SNL won an award? Or are you talking about how SNL was essentially running the Emmys?
Well, that, yeah.
So, both things were happening.
Yeah, because both things were happening. The award is, I figured they would win because of the Trump stuff. And so, of course, they got to vote for that. Yeah. But I think Lorne Michaels was producing the show. Is that not right?
I think he was. And like, so, okay, so.
But how many, the hosts were nothing. Those were not.
I like them. I like those two. They
okay,
do stand
fine.
Up,
but my point is, it's the Emmy Awards. This is
right, I know,
the
I know,
biggest but- night for television. Are those two guys the level of star power of television or entertainment that should be hosting that show? Is that where we're at right now?
But this is what you always say. It's like you always tell me. The Emmys aired the other night on NBC.
Right.
So now NBC says, okay, who do we have in the talent pool?
I know.
That we want to promote. What do we want to do? So, yeah. So, obviously, Lorne Michaels was running that show. Colin Jost and Michael Che were hosting. They work together every week.
I mean, they were fine.
That makes sense. But what's her name opened the show? Kate McKinnon.
Right.
And who did she come out with?
With Kenan Thompson, right?
Kenan Thompson. So they come out and open the show. So right from the jump, you know, this is not just Colin Jost and Michael Che hosting. This is an SNL, you know.
And then we production. Had the mysterious cameos, ongoing cameos of Maya Rudolph and Fred Armiston.
No, but you know what that's about. They have a new show on Netflix.
I don't care.
I mean, not on Netflix. On Amazon Prime. No, I watched it. I started watching it. This show, people are talking about this show saying that it's like the best show
Those segments that they did were excruciating.
They were terrible.
To
I
watch.
Agree.
It was it wasn't terrible. It was excruciating. It was embarrassing. And I'm sitting here going, so now am I missing something? Or is there, to me, as I said, and once again, I sound like I'm 100 years old, but my point is, there was a time at the Emmy Awards and at the Oscars when we were talking, you said, hey, I like Jimmy Kimmel. Jimmy Kimmel, fine. He's fine. But he doesn't reach the level of importance like 40 years ago when the hosts of these award shows used to be people of the day who were considered the prime entertainers of the day, whether it was Bob Hope or Johnny Carson. There was a sense of importance. I can't believe that the two guys from Weekend Update are that high on the pinnacle. And if they are that high on our level of entertainment, then our level has really dropped.
Well, who are they? Who do you think they're going to get? What do you think they're going to have? Like, who would be up there with, like, Tom Hanks? Alec Baldwin and Steve Martin have hosted.
Okay, but so what? So let him do it again.
I don't know if he wants to do it again. Well, I think they don't. I think the networks would have them in a second. I just don't think they want
to
do that.
I think that they
are. It's a lot of work.
But so what? What is Alec Baldwin doing?
And it's a thankless job because people like you and me are talking about how crap it was.
I'm just saying is that I, first of all, I'm watching this show. I'm going, okay. And then, you know, right out of the bat, I mean, now every award show, and I don't know, I think this is very, you know, representative of the times we are in and a younger generation that needs to say, look at me and I'm important. But now every award show is overtly political, overtly culturally enlightened. Everybody has to talk about a cause. Within the first 20 minutes, the word diversity, you know how they have those clouds when you can say, like, on your internet page or your Facebook page, what words you use the most?
Yeah, the word clouds.
Yeah, the word cloud. Is that what that's called?
Word clouds.
Yeah. Well, if you did a word cloud on the first 5 minutes or 10 minutes of the Emmys, the word diversity was everywhere. That was the only thing I was hearing. And I'm like, are we here to push a social cause, or are we here to simply recognize the best of the television season? And we it's almost as if the awards were second. And what I loved, the great irony was, we heard all about diversity. Diversity, well, there's diverse this, there's diverse that. Of course, there was, you know, there now, as I said, you know, there's the nice shots against, you know, apparently to be a white male in this society now is, you know, you might as well just go away because you're hated. And Emily Clark made that clear. But my point is, all they talked about was diversity, and the best part was the first six categories, all white people.
Always.
All white people. But, so I'm sitting there going, no, see, you're patting yourself on the back, and the winners were all white.
No, but I liked but that's part of why I liked the musical number that we fixed it or whatever, you know, that they did with, it was when they opened the show. Because it's definitely.
But why is there a scorecard? Why is there a scorecard? You know,
there isn't a scorecard.
There is.
They're basically showing you how farcical it is because it hasn't. Nothing's been fixed. Nothing's been fixed.
I understand that, but so my point is they were all. They're trying to have it both ways because they kept talking about it. Oh, this category and this year is the most diverse of all this, and that's fine and that's fine. But now we had to get to the point where now we're counting how many white people won. And then Michael Che made a comment, oh, six winners, and none of them thanked Jesus.
Well, because he had, right, but that's because he had made a joke earlier in the show.
I understand
about how
that.
White people never thank Jesus.
I understand that. But my point is that there is a scorecard now. Mental scorecard going on. And all I know is when the first black woman won, the auditorium was drowning in applause. I didn't even know who she was. Who's Selena King or Sheila King or something like that? I don't even know who she was.
No, you're...
Regina King.
Regina King has been on TV.
What was she on?
I mean, she probably started her career on The Cosby Show. She's been on TV for decades.
And what did she win for here?
She won, I think, for a limited series.
Yeah.
So
okay.
I don't know.
And you would have thought the Queen of England walked, and you would have thought the way.
First of all, that is not Regina King's first award. Okay, let me tell you.
That's not my point. My point is that
so many credits that I can't even remember them. She was in Ray. She was in Jerry Maguire. Yeah, remember she plays cute.
That's not my
no wife in Jerry Maguire.
My point is.
She's on the Big Bang Theory.
My point is the way the crowd reacted to an African American person winning.
Well, I took that more as she was the underdog in the category.
And,
I don't think she was expecting to win, and I don't think she
and the woman who announced her name was jumping up and down when she won. Her eyes were exploding. Ooh! And I'm like, you know, we're here to talk about the best. And if it's a white person, that's fine. If it's an African-American, it's fine. If it's an Asian, it's fine. But I just don't understand. They have become so politicized and so politically correct now that the awards themselves are not even important. That was the takeaway I got. Was I was hearing a lot of speeches, I was hearing and I was feeling a lot of just political and cultural messages being shoved out, while we're supposed to be just giving awards out for some fun stuff. Was that show fun to you?
I always like watching award shows just for this year. Like, I just, it wasn't unfun.
Wow. Is that diplomatic?
I don't mind some of the more political commentary. That stuff doesn't bother me. Yeah. So.
Well, like I said, it doesn't bother me in the right context.
If I was
at a political rally for these causes, I would say right on. And I've said that before. I have no problem with the messaging. I have a problem with the forum. This is not where this messaging needs to take place. This is a political rally or at a fundraiser. I'm all for it.
Okay, I have two things to say. First, I'm going to correct myself before someone else does. So Regina King got her start decades ago on the very popular sitcom 227. Okay?
Oh, God.
Remember 227?
Wow. Yeah, 227. Well, there's...
I loved that show. Okay, now, second, the only thing I would say about... So I do believe that
I have no problem with her winning.
I'm going to explain. I know. I'm just correcting myself because I mistakenly said The Cosby Show. But in fact, she was the star of 227. And I loved that.
Well, that
show.
Was Jack Kay. So let's be honest.
I was watching it every... Well, Jack Kay, of course, yes. But, okay, so I do think the connection is that Hollywood and all of the players in Hollywood, the writers, the directors, the actors, they... see themselves as creating art that oftentimes is a reflection of what's happening in our society. And so I think that's where the connection comes to feeling like this is a time to comment either on like current affairs or politics or, you know, any kind of issues in the air.
Look, it's
that's how I see it.
This is nothing new. You know, in 1972, Marlon Brando sent out a Native American to accept his award. And that was really the beginning of this. That was the first time when a political kind of statement was made at the time was just a big Hollywood party and show. And suddenly, right, Marlon Brando, winning Best Actor for The Godfather, sent up to accept his award. A Native American, and she gave a speech about at the time. And still,
I don't think she accepted the award. I think she got up and rejected it.
Well, whatever. My point is, instead, he didn't go up there.
Right.
He sent someone to make a political statement, and after that happened, the entire it didn't take over immediately, but suddenly, to your point, causes and cultural types of things were injected into these formerly very just jubilant and superficial, if you will, award shows. And suddenly there was this real sense of importance. And some people for many years, Marlon Brando got a hard, he was ostracized for doing that. How dare you crash our party? That was initially, if you look at the initial reactions back in 1972, that wasn't today, that would be praised. And back then he was ostracized and he was criticized. How dare you, ruin our party? We were having fun. And then you brought this Native American into to bring in up some social thing. Now it's just the opposite. Now, if you don't come with an agenda,
what I understand is he was protesting how Hollywood portrayed Native Americans in film at that time,
and the entire way that our country had treated the Native Americans.
It wasn't like he was, he was like protesting something that was totally
no. He was bringing awareness to the treatment our country's treatment, and part of our country's treatment at the time was the stereotypical portrayal of the Native Americans, because most people, the only place they saw Native Americans were in movies and on TV shows.
Right.
You know, and you know, you watch a show like, I mean, it's hilarious. Go back and find, go on YouTube and find, there's a show called F Troop. The people that they had playing American Native Americans on that show, they were all Jewish.
Oh, really?
They were all like, oh, what the hell are you, what's going on? How are you doing? I mean, it was like hilarious. You know, there were all these
good
Jewish.
For Marlon Brando,
yeah, no, exactly. But my point is that started this, and there's, and once again, I have no problem with bringing attention, but now it just seems, as I said so many times, we don't do anything in moderation. We always go from one side of the needle to the other, and I was watching this show. It was painful to watch some of these skits. It was painful to watch what was passing, and you're missing
like the most offensive part of the whole show,
which was what?
The proposal.
Oh, well, don't even get me started on that, because now that plays into my other point here about how our culture has changed and the influx of social media. Now, I mean, that was a completely inappropriate thing to do. However, I guarantee you, if you took a poll, more people would say it was great, it was awesome, it was cool, because now, of course, the look at me generation, you can't just get engaged by giving someone a ring and saying, will you marry me? If you don't do it on national television, on top of a mountain, on a big screen at a football game, at a concert stage, then it was really not a really good proposal. I'm not trying to get personal here.
Well, I hear you.
And
the,
you don't have
what's
to...
very odd about it, though, is that the guy, so Glenn Weiss, who was the guy who was accepting the award for directing the Oscars.
Okay, right.
So double whammy, right?
Right, exactly.
Where I am already annoyed that a televised award show is
wins.
Getting an award on another televised
right.
award show. But, so Glenn Weiss, this guy has got to be what, in his 50s or even 60s?
Oh, I'm sure he was in his
60s. Really part of like this like
right.
What is the generation now? I mean, it's not even like
it's millennials
anymore, right?
Now it's Generation Z or something.
Do they have a name yet?
I think they have Generation Z.
Okay. So it's not even like he's of this generation where everything's got to be done, you know,
But see, that's the point. But they see, that's the point. That's my point exactly too. And on the greater scale, is this narcissistic thing has permeated our society so much that even adults, in an effort to be cool, there was a time when children grew up in order to be adults. Now, sadly, adults are de-aging to act like teenagers. That's the society.
I can kind of get on board with that, but only because I don't really want to be old.
Well, so. I understand that, but you know, when you as I said many times, when you have to have a verb, when you have to create a verb for being an adult. When you are what are you doing? Are you adulting now? That means to me that being responsible and being mature is a very transitory kind of thing, that it's not a part of who you are. It's just a diversion of who you are. Oh, like today I was adulting. I paid my bills.
I like your psychological analysis of that. You sound like you know what you're talking about.
Well, yes, because I do. Yeah, because when you take that and you make it just into a behavior, as opposed to a part of your personality. No, you are an adult.
Yeah.
I love my godson. He's 33 years old. I love him to death. But I had to laugh when he got engaged and they started writing checks for their wedding, like, you know, for down payments and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he was, at the time, he was like 30. And he said to me, wow, I'm actually feeling like an adult now.
Right.
And I'm like, you're 30!
Yeah.
You're feeling like an adult. I got news for you. And I love the kid to death, but I'm like, what are you talking about?
I know, but a part of me can kind of relate to what he's saying.
Oh.
So I don't know. We'll have to figure out.
Well, you know, you have to get to a point. You will hit a point, and trust me.
I don't know when this all started. Definitely the concept of adulting started with the millennials.
Yes.
I know that.
Because they're 35 years old and they're still reading comic books. They're not leading mature lives. And I'm not saying, look,
see, you sound like my dad. They're still going to Lollapalooza.
No, because I do that. Lollapalooza. Hey, I'm a poster boy. I don't lead a conventional life I'm not some bohemian. But my point is, I don't lead a conventional life in that, I've got 2.5 kids and, I go to the swap meets and I go to the PTA.
Swap meets?
What do you think it is? But I mean, so I'm not espousing that and I'm not being hypocritical. But my point is that at the same time, I jump on a plane and go to see an Elton John concert. People might think that that's immature. Fine. I'm not saying that you have to, completely shut off your interests, but there is a certain point when you do have to admit and embrace and be a mature member of society and do things in a way that give your life some order, as opposed to being 35 and you will hit the, if you feel this right now, believe me. There's going to come a point in another 4 or 5 years that you will, if you're like, oh, I don't want it, but you get a point where you do embrace your maturity.
So I just recently gave myself a bedtime, okay? I get it. Like, I'm like, something needs to change here. What is it? So then I was like, okay, I just, no matter what I'm doing, no matter like how fulfilling it feels or whatever, there's a point when the clock strikes that I have to say, you know what? I need to drop whatever it is I'm doing, get up, wash my face, brush my teeth, get in bed. So that I get it. Like, I'm just.
But I mean, to do that, and I'm not trying to get personal here. And if you want to share this, that's fine. If not, you don't have to. But how did your husband propose to you? And if you don't want to share that, that's fine.
Oh, no, I don't care. It's not like we were at an appointment or anything. It's not.
Well, we're still trying to unravel the Emily appointment. The mystery of that. And that is episode 1. And that is episode 121, folks, if you want to go back and binge on that.
So we were in Thailand.
Wow.
In the middle of the jungle. Yeah, staying at a tented camp resort in the middle of the jungle, which was really amazing. And we had been there for a couple of days, and we were having dinner that night, and he had arranged dinner, and so we left our tent. And we were walking.
Now, was this glamping or is this a real tent?
It's glamping.
Yeah, of course. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it was awesome. I mean, the tent is like nicer than my real house. I just thought we were having dinner like in the restaurant, like a restaurant there. But no, we were taken to like a private wine cellar. On the ground, in the middle of the jungle. We were in a wine cellar in the middle of the jungle.
Okay.
And I think when we walked in, I sort of
yeah, like, okay, wait a minute.
Might be right. Because it was pretty special.
Okay, and that's great. But now that was how many years?
And to your point, because I know why you're asking me this, obviously. So it was a very amazing, yet private moment.
Right.
I mean, there wasn't even a guy, like when he was going to propose, suddenly any server that had been helping us, it was a private room. So we were having like one-on-one, service.
Right.
But like this guy disappeared, because they knew to make.
Well, he got eaten by a tiger.
So, yeah, right. So it was a very...
He went out for a smoke, and he got eaten by a tiger, but that's a whole other story.
Because it was intentionally a very private...
Right. Moment. Now...
In the Golden Triangle in Thailand.
Right. But my... So my point is that there's this special moment that was shared between you. Now, once again, it was what? How long have you been married?
10 years, yeah. But we were engaged for a while too. So right. We got engaged in 2008. It was ten. No, we got engaged. We got married in 2008. What am I talking about?
All right. So
It was over 10 years ago.
Yeah. So my point is, this was before the whole real social media craze. So you didn't publicize this or publish this or post this all over the world for everybody to see it. Now, what's interesting? Some people might say there's a part of me.
No, wait. I went to work and I did not even tell anyone that I got engaged because I was never a fan of, like, you know, I'd been working for some time. And so over the course of a number of years, like, people around you at, you know, your colleagues would ever get engaged. And like, I could never stand when women would like march into the office, like, you know,
oh, right,
with the jazz hands and the ring in the air, like, I'm engaged. Like, I just always found it a little obnoxious. So when I came back from this trip, and we had gone on a lot of really fantastic trips together. So people would ask me, like, oh, so any news? And I was like, no news. And, you know, I'm happy to share the news if, like, people were, but I did not want to go marching into the office, like, you know, like kicking the top hat and kicking my legs up, like, you know, the Rockettes, like, I'm engaged. Everybody.
Right. But nowadays,
my colleagues got mad at me that I did not tell them right away.
Right. But nowadays you hire a photographer to be there for the proposal.
Well, you have to, because you need a good photo for Instagram.
Well, this is my point. Now I talk about this and I'm railing against this. But there's a part of me, and I'm not afraid to admit this, there's a part of me that is angry about the social media world, not because of what it does, but I was doing this before it was cool. And that's what angers me sometimes, because I'm sitting there going, you know what, I got news for you. Because here's my proposal. All right, I met my wife in high school, right?
Mm-hmm.
At a basketball game at my high school when we were 16. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay?
This is sounding familiar to me. I feel like I've heard this story.
Yeah. When I proposed to her in the gym where we met.
Oh, that's cute.
At center court. And I went there under the guise at the time. I was helping to organize a reunion baseball game at my school, and so I talked to my former baseball coach, and I said, look, can I say, you know, since we're doing this event in a couple of weeks, can I come to the school and say that I have to meet you to talk about something so we can get into so that makes sense for us, me and her, to go to the school to meet you. And then once we're in the school... I'll ask for you, and you'll say, oh, someone will say, oh, well, he'll be right with you. And then we'll just stroll in the gym, and we'll walk in the gym, and we go to center court, and I'll just be standing there, and all of a sudden I go down on the knee, and I propose. Mm-hmm. So that's what I did.
But are there people in this gym, like in the bleachers?
No. It was summer, so the gym was empty, except for a few people at the school who let us in, and this one coach. So now the other side of the coin is that the school, after I did it, and there was a few people at the school that were there, you know, because they opened the gym and they knew who I was. And so, and they weren't in the room when I did it. But then once it was done, they came in. They had one of the teachers there was the photographer, you know, for the yearbook or whatever. And he actually took pictures of it.
Oh.
Of me, you know, and we kind of recreated the thing. And they put it in the newspaper. Like, they sent it out to the local newspaper.
Oh, that's so sweet.
You know, that said, oh, you know, former alumni came back. So in my own little way of, you know, of almost 30 years ago, before there was social media, I was doing what people are doing now.
Sure. But back then it was a more pure like gesture, because today people stage all this stuff so that
That's my point.
The video or the
right.
Or the
so now this guy, this Instagram. This Glenn Weiss, who I'm even mad I know his name. You know, I mean, he completely, and you know what kills me? So where was the band playing him off on this?
Well, this is the thing. He's the guy that tells the band to play people off at the Oscars.
Right.
But I saw him being interviewed about this. I think it was Jimmy Kimmel, because Kimmel knows him really well.
Well, sure.
And he came on, so I saw him talking about it, and he said, and I think it was Kimmel that asked him, like, what were you going to do if you got played? Because you're the guy that plays people off. So he did not know. I think this is interesting. You would think that being that he would have been connected and would have said to them, like, if I win, I'm going to do this just so they know not to play him off. But at the same time, no, he said he was sitting in his seat and he was calculating, like he was going over his prepared speech in his head, and he was editing out, because he was getting the gist of how much time they were giving people. And then he was editing out certain things from there so that he could try to fit into an acceptable amount of time.
I understand that, but at the end of the day, he hijacked.
In other words, he did not know. He was risking getting played off. He did not know.
Well, certainly, sure, but he did. But my point is, he didn't, and they never would have done it. They never would have played him off, because then they would have gotten killed for that. And this was from the, I got news for you, from the producer's standpoint and from NBC standpoint, this was awesome because it became viral. It became the big story.
Yeah, it is totally the big story.
So my point is, there was no way where they're going to write it. They were going to play him off. They were going to let him do this as long as he wanted, because it became an event within the show to bring attention to it. But meanwhile, if I'm an actor who I've waited, like Henry Winkler, I've waited 43 years
Henry Winkler.
To get my Emmy, he's being counted off.
Yeah.
And mean this guy, some obscure goofball who is engaged to some other woman who we don't know, suddenly gets center stage and co-ops and hijacks this entire show. And to your point exactly, a guy who should know better.
Right.
Because if he was the director, he wants his show to be on time. That's the great irony here.
Right.
And so, but I'm sitting there going, what is this show? This has become a self-indulgent, as we said earlier, it was a commercial for Saturday Night Live. You know, Lorne Michaels goes up there, and then now he's the grand, you know, emeritus. You know, he's now the, you know, the producer of all time. You know,
right?
The aged and you know, hallowed man. As I said, if you take away the Trump stuff, nobody is watching Saturday Night Live. Except for to see if our Ariana Grande is going to break up with Pete Davidson this year. That's why people are going to watch the show.
Right.
And see him, you know, if he breaks up, you know, is he going to shoot himself on the air? That's going to be the big thing. Well, my point is, name me one major skit or one major character that has become popular aside from the Trump thing.
Well, I don't really watch SNL.
Well, of course you don't. You know why? Because it's not good.
But they still have some really. I mean, Kate McKinnon is.
I understand that. No, she's. I mean, she's good. She's very talented. I get it. They do. But my point is, if it wasn't for this Trump stuff, no one would be watching it. But regardless, my point is that this Emmy show, I'm watching this show, and I'm saying, first of all, what's very, and this is a product of the times, and we talked about this before. First of all, when did they get more than five nominees in some of these categories? Some categories had
more than five?
Some categories had eight.
What?
Yeah, go back and look. There were some categories that had seven, five or six or seven people in it. Then secondly, how can you, in a normal person's life, how can you keep track of all these shows on all these different formats? I'm watching these shows and or watch these nominees. I'm going, never heard of it. Never heard of it.
Well, yeah, because we just got you on Netflix.
Never heard of it. Ago. Never heard of it. You know, before what was great about the Emmys, and that's where the Oscars are falling in the same category in a different way, is that the nominees, you know, because we have become such a fractionalized niche kind of culture now, there are very few communal things. And so you can't watch a show, an award show, and know that everybody in the audience is going to know every one of those nominees.
Well, I hear what you're saying, and I don't think that the Emmys does for the network that's broadcasting the award show what it should, but I do think it is serving the shows in the sense that, I mean, I like, by the end of the night, I was like, wow, there's a laundry list of shows that I really need to get on and either finish watching
right. Or
start watching. Like, I was like, God, I got to get back to The Americans and finish watching that. They won a couple of
You still haven't seen the end of that?
No, do not tell me what happens.
Well,
do not tell me.
Well, I got to tell you what happens. You know, I mean, it's history.
What happens with shows.
The wall comes down, okay? Is that a shock to you?
Okay, listen. The Americans, The Crown, now we're watching Succession. Any show I watch, Better Call Saul, any show that I watch with my husband, I get seriously delayed because he travels so much. So I don't want to watch it when he's not around. But then he's hardly around. So that's the problem. I mean, I get behind because of that. It's not for lack of interest, you know.
Well, at least we know it's interesting. You know what's interesting, though? Every show that you just mentioned, those four little shows you just kind of rattled off.
Yeah.
Those are all among my favorite shows.
Right. So this is what I'm saying. The award shows still serve the shows well. Or whatever, you know, like the films sometimes, I mean, in many cases with the Oscars, people find out about movies that they didn't even know about. And they decide, oh, maybe I'll go and see that. You know, so for me, I walk away from the Emmys saying, wow, there's a whole list of shows that I need to. Oh, Handmaid's Tale or not Handmaid's Tale. Yeah, Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah.
I started that. I haven't quite finished it, but I do have a Hulu subscription. Now, I started watching it on an airplane, but I didn't have a Hulu subscription.
Oh, you have
Hulu
now?
That's one of the reasons I got one, because I wanted to keep watching it. You know, so I'm saying to him, I'm watching all of these shows win, and I'm thinking, got to finish this one, got to finish that. You know, you just, it does help highlight the quality material that's out there.
Well, I'm just wondering now, so I just got my latest issue of Entertainment Weekly, and it was their big, fall TV preview, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Issue. And so I'm paging through it to see what I'm going to want to watch, in the next 4 months and get ready with my DVR. And they've got a nice little calendar at the end of the whole feature with, every day what different shows are
what you need to watch
premiering on different days and what channels they're on. And now that I am into the Amazon Prime Netflix world, at least I have a little more access than I did a couple of years ago, so I'm feeling a little more in tune. I don't have Hulu yet, but I still am feeling at least I have access to most of the formats.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking through all the shows and circling them and putting them in my little paper day planner that I got from Target. Of which I write everything down in my day planner.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, man.
And I even use a highlighter to highlight the different events on the days of which I put stuff on the dates in my day planner. In fact, in November, I'll have to start getting my 2019 day planner for 20.
Is it a Chandler's? Do you use a Chandler's?
I don't know.
Are you kidding me? You don't know what a Chandler's is? That was like the
Is that the one?
That was the
I don't know if Target has that one. I don't know if Target has that one. Because I know the one you're talking about, and I do like that one, but I don't know where to get it. Where do I get that?
Maybe like an Office Depot,
yeah.
I want
to
say.
You have to try to find. Yeah, I've been going to Target because, yeah, the ones I've gotten the last couple of years have got like polka dots. They're clearly made for teenage girls.
Yeah, you need
I've got ones with stripes and polka dots on them. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
I have to go to the office. But my point is, so I'm looking through this, and I'm all ready with my dates, and I'm looking to see this, and I look through the whole episode, all the shows, from now till November, and I'm getting ready for my DVR and start to, I saw maybe two shows that I'm going to probably look and watch out of
really?
All the shows, maybe three.
Well, so I told you that, you know, the Maya Rudolph and Fred Armisen.
Okay.
Yeah, that show, I've watched the first couple of episodes. It is actually pretty intriguing.
Can't do it.
Why not?
Because it looked, because if what they showed me on national television any representation, it looks horrible.
Yeah, that I would not base it on their Emmy.
So what is the show then? What is the show that you were impressed by?
It's called Forever. It's called Forever, and the basic premise it kicks off with like they are a married couple.
Oh, so they're playing. Oh, they're not just doing themselves.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay. I thought maybe it was some just kind of like freeform show. This is actually like a legitimate show with a plot and everything.
Yes.
And what is it on?
That's on Amazon Prime, I think.
Okay.
Amazon Prime.
All right.
Now, Julia Roberts, I think, also has.
Yeah, no, that looks good.
A show, but what is that? Is it on Netflix?
I think that's on HBO.
It's called Homecoming.
Yeah.
Is that on HBO? Are you sure?
It might be. Or maybe it is Netflix. See, once again, this is my point.
I know, we can't keep track anymore.
You can't keep track. It's so crazy.
Hey, Julia Roberts. We'll call it the small screen. It has to be some decent material to attract. I mean, I'm not saying she's Julia Roberts. You know, she's
well. Today, television is the spot.
It's Amazon. I think it's also on Amazon.
Oh, okay. If you're a real actor now, unless you want to be a cartoon or a superhero. You go to television. Television is where the real stories are being told and the real acting is being done, not in Hollywood movies. Those days are over.
Now, well, okay, so brings me to my next point. Sean Penn has a Hulu series that, if it hasn't already premiered, it's going to very soon because I've seen it promoted in a bunch of places, called The First. And it's about the first human mission to Mars, which could kind of be interesting.
Yeah. And, of course, there's going to be a movie about Neil Armstrong, too, that's at the theaters with Ryan Gosling.
Yes. Ooh, hey, I'll go see that. there's some decent stuff out there, but we've got to get you. But, see, that's the thing. It's like the network stuff.
Oh, the networks are over.
Not really cutting it. Yeah.
No, the networks are all – the networks, as I said, are slowly – migrating to simply reality shows and big sporting events and award shows. And so
we need to get you to spread your streaming wings.
I'm doing that. I just finished Ozark, the second season, and really like that. In fact, I binge watched Ozark second season the 2 days after it premiered.
Wow, look at you, like you're binge watching and everything.
Yeah, hey, look, I was binge watching before it had a name, okay? I used to watch all day Honeymooners episodes for 12 hours before it had a name on it.
I
used to go to restaurants and eat before I became a foodie. You know what a foodie is? Someone who can't cook and goes out to dinner all the time.
Hmm.
That's what a foodie is.
Hmm.
I've been going to restaurants for 35 years.
You're sounding very get off my lawn.
Well, what makes you a foodie as opposed to somebody who goes to a restaurant to have a dinner?
No, I don't call myself a foodie.
No, I'm not saying you. I'm just saying we have to have now. I'm saying the collective you. We have to have a title.
Right.
You just don't go out to dinner. Or I like to go out to dinner. I am a foodie,
right?
Because I learned the term complex and hints. This is a complex flavor, and it has hints of hibiscus
and notes.
Notes, complex, and hints. That makes you a foodie, and of course, a camera to take a picture.
And an Instagram account.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
So get off my dinner table.
Right.
Well, once again, I look at my list of things we were supposed to talk about, and we barely scratched the surface on any of them. But what did we learn today?
Hmm.
What I
Well,
you know what I learned?
Should be private.
Well, no, I learned how you were in Thailand and how you got engaged. I never heard that story.
Part of the greater lesson that proposals should be a private moment.
Yeah, but I didn't. I had no idea that you were out in the ravages of a Thailand jungle.
True story.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Would that be considered a safari?
I would say the ravages. I mean, we were in a private wine cellar in the middle of the jungle.
Would that be considered a safari that you were on or no?
No, I've been on safari, but that was in Africa.
Where did you go on a safari?
In the Kruger in South Africa.
Because that's, I want to do that next.
Oh, it's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really special.
Yeah, that I definitely want to do.
Yeah, but I will give you some advice.
What?
If they tell you stay in the Jeep, you stay in the Jeep.
Oh, believe me. Believe me. I'm staying in the Jeep.
Because one minute you're just kind of like, driving down the kind of checking out the landscape. And the next minute you are literally in the middle of the lion's den.
Yeah. Oh, I believe it. Yeah. How long did you go for?
Well, I was in South Africa for, I think, 10 days total. But the safari, we were there for, I think we were there for, like, 4 days, which is actually a lot for safari.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah, it is. Because for starters, it can be pretty expensive, but it's well worth it. But also, so usually people, I think, do, like, 2 days. But also, you know, the schedule that you're on, which this might not be a problem for you because you're an insomniac, but you, in order to do the game drives, they do them like twice a day and you want to make the most of it. And so the first game drive, like you literally have to meet the group at like, you know, 5 a.m.
Right.
You have to get up at like a crazy time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then you kind of, you go for a few hours and then you come back, you have lunch and then you go for the afternoon game drive. It's a little exhausting actually.
Yeah.
So you can only really do it for a few days, but it was awesome.
Yeah, no, I definitely want to do that. Well, anyway, like I said, I'm looking at my list, you know, safaris and Thailand engagement proposals, nowhere on the list. It's nowhere on my list of what we were supposed to talk about today.
This is what we do.
Right. Well, perhaps we will talk about some of the other topics, because some of them I think are kind of evergreen that we can talk about later. But thank you so much once again, Emily Armonetti. Always interesting, revealing, and informative. And I appreciate your time and appreciate you sharing. And we will talk again soon. Whoops. And so that ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic right here at WGNplus.com. A new episode is posted every Monday for your listening pleasure, so I hope that you will continue to click on, swipe on, whatever it is you do to find us. Thank you once again for listening. This was episode 123 of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. I'm Jim Toronto. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. This is Captain Podtastic, the only podcast from the end of the web to your screen.